I would like to call this meeting of the City Council of University City to order at 6:38. I apologize for the late start time to our residents. Ms. Pum, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Price? Ms. Carr?
Present.
Mr. Kraft?
Here.
Mr. Crow?
Here.
Mr. Glicker?
Mr.
Sharp?
Here.
Mayor Welsh?
Here. Thank you very much. We now move on to the approval of the agenda. Does any member of council have any change or addition to the agenda? Mr. Sharp? Could you please turn on your microphone?
I would like to withdraw the name of Michael Miller from the appointment to the Historic Preservations Commission prior to a previous appointment.
Thank you very much. Any other changes? Is there a motion to approve the agenda as amended? Mr. Glickert moves. Is there a second? Ms. Carr seconds. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. We now move on to a proclamation. We have a proclamation for University City resident Fanny Houston. Ms. Houston, if you could come up to the podium. And Mr. Price will and Mr. Sharp will present you as I read the proclamation. Whereas, much to the delight of 80 May and Alonzo Dillon, 75 years ago on May 2, 1938, Fanny Bernice Dillon was born in Memphis, Tennessee. And whereas Fanny Dillon moved to Webster Groves, Missouri at the age of 2 and graduated from Sumner High School in 1957. And whereas Fanny Dillon married Robert Clarence Houston III on September 1, 1957 and became Fanny Houston and was blessed with 4 children, Michael, Kimberly, Robert, and Troy. Her family grew and now includes 9 grandchildren and 8 great-grandchildren. And whereas Fanny Houston worked for the St. Louis Public Schools as an office manager for 31 years, retiring in June 2000, and is very active at her church, Antioch Baptist. And whereas Fanny Houston, along with her good friends Nova Felton and May Etta Weston, contacted Captain Carol Jackson of the University City Police Department to discuss neighborhood concerns, and began a group that later evolved into neighborhood watch units and into the police department focus group in 2005. And whereas the purpose for this now well-established group is to be a place where all residents have an opportunity to express concerns, ask questions, discuss problems, share information, plan activities, and coordinate efforts to improve the city of University City. And whereas Fanny Houston also volunteered as a tutor in the University City schools, served as the secretary of her block unit, and was active in the campaigns of President Barack Obama. And whereas Fanny Houston's commitment to giving of her time and herself to better the community she calls home should serve as an example to all. Now, therefore, the City Council of University City does hereby proclaim May 15, 2013 as Fanny Houston Day, as University City pays special tribute to this very special member of our community on the occasion of her 75th birthday. In witness whereof, we, the members of the Council of University City noted below, do hereunto set our hands and cause the seal of the City of University City to be affixed this 13th day of May in the year 2013. Congratulations. You're welcome. We now move on to the approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of the April 22, 2013 City Council study session? Mr. Sharp moves. Is there a second? Mr. Glickert seconds. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of the City Council regular session minutes from April 22, 2013? Yeah, Mr. Sharp moves. Is there a second? Mr. Glickert seconds. Is there any discussion? Ms. Carr?
I would like to discuss the point of order on page 6. Initially, we had a change in the agenda. Mr. Kraft asked that we put on the agenda a discussion of council rules and policies. As he began to talk at almost the three-minute mark, I voiced a point of order, and the mayor decided that he should continue. I would like to put her quote first. I will play it for you. I'd like to put her statement in a quote. It's not unprecedented. Ms. Wassey's statement was also put into a quote. So I will...
May I address that? She said for the record. That's why it was in the quote.
Ms. Palmer, are you speaking of Ms. Wassey?
Excuse me. The mayor was involved.
Continue, Ms. Carr.
The task force was discussed at least at three meetings in 2010 with no objection.
Point of order.
The bike walk task.
What is your point of order? Point of order is that the discussion was to be about council rules, and this appears to be about our discussion before. I'm uncomfortable with the fact that we're not discussing council rules right now, and we're discussing something else.
I have ruled that Mr. Kraft can continue if the council would like to overturn that. I think Mr. Kraft, we have time, and I think Mr. Kraft should be able to continue.
Thank you.
The reason I played that for you is that in council rules, it does say that when there is a point of order, rule number five, indicating that we're going to use Robert's rules to run our meeting, if there is a point of order and the mayor rules that she also offers to us the opportunity to overrule. But as you just heard, she buzzed right through that, not even pausing. If the council would like to overturn that, and then went right into it. I just like it in quotes because, to my mind, this is a violation of the Missouri Revised Statute 610.020. We are supposed to attempt to advise the public of that which we will be discussing. I do not think that Mr. Kraft did so. I think he misrepresented his topic. That was my point of order, and I think I would like to have that in quotes.
Mr. Kraft?
The change that I believe you're requesting is a redundancy in her sentence. I believe that the rule that the council has generally followed, is my understanding, is that the minutes clear up ambiguities. For example, if you say that or this or him or her, you can put in parentheses who it really was referring to. Someone nods their head, you can say yes. That's number one. And then that there's redundancies as people are speaking extemporaneously and repeating themselves, which happened in the case of the mayor. There's no reason to repeat the stumbles and the redundancies. The second thing that I've noticed is that people change only their own statements. They don't change other people's statements. So whenever there's been a suggestion about changing what I said, it's always been approved by me. My understanding is that's always been the case. So if someone said something, they're allowed to correct or clarify their own statement. So what you're asking is you're going to put quotes or you're going to decide what the statement is for somebody else, which I think is incorrect.
Mr. Crow.
First off, I want to express that I was not here on the night, but for those of you, and I know there are three ladies in the room sitting over there that will be shocked that I actually listened to the audio tape of the last meeting, and to me, I think everything each of us says up here is for the record, would be the first thing I would say, and I have a hard time trying to figure out why, if you said it and you don't want it to be in quotes, why it shouldn't be in quotes. because you said it. I come back to a broader, having listened to well over an hour of the last meeting, I'm still trying to determine how it ever got there. Because to me, Mr. Kraft came in, my colleague, and said that he wanted to have a discussion. There was no second. It wasn't the study session. It was just done during the meeting. And I'm trying to determine, the mayor actually asked during the study session if there were changes to the agenda. Again, our colleague, Mr. Kraft, wasn't there. But I got to figure that based on, if you guys listen to this tape, this conversation went on for 45 minutes. I kind of find it hard to believe that a few people didn't know that this conversation was going to occur. I still come back to the question that I'm still rattled at, and that is, what about this issue caused this agenda item to have no notice to any of your colleagues on the council? No notice, yet there was time to research a number of things. Time to research, the charter, the previous minutes, prepare the remarks, research HIPAA, research employment law, research Ronald Reagan's quotes, and research the linguistic review of the word policy. Yet, with all of that time spent, there wasn't any time to notice up any of the colleagues until such time as the meeting had already started. I find that to just be sort of numbing, to say the least. I also find it interesting that during the conversation...
Point of order. The discussion now is to review the minutes of the meeting. If you are unhappy with what happened at the meeting, we can discuss that at a different point in the agenda. I'm sure there'll be time for it. The discussion now is, do we agree about what happened at the meeting, not why it happened?
I appreciate you helping me understand the rules after your 15-minute.
Mr. Kraft has made a point of order.
I'd like a ruling.
I will rule that I think Mr. Kraft has a point. Mr. Crow, I ask that you bring up your points during the council comments section. We are now talking about the rules.
I would like to appeal your rule.
Second.
We have an appeal in a second. Ms. Pum, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Price. Correct. Ms. Carr?
Aye.
Mr. Kraft? Mr. Crow?
Aye.
Mr. Glickert?
Nay.
Mr. Sharp?
Aye.
Mayor Welsh?
Nay. The appeal fails.
Thank you. I'd like to continue my remarks. Again, as this...
The point of order was upheld. We did not have the two-thirds necessary. So can you continue your comments, please, in the council comments section?
Yes.
We have any more discussion on Ms. Carr's points. Mr. Price.
Yeah, just this is for the record. And this is to the chair. Just for future reference, if this colleague brings up something that was not on the agenda, if we go back and look at the record, I get stopped. Now, I have repeatedly over time said that Mr. Kraft is treated differently than myself. That's fact. That's not fiction. So, the gist of this to me is, if he brings something that is not on the agenda, I just need it clear from you. Is that okay for him to do it and not okay for me to do it? And please don't let him say point of order.
Mr. Price, I will say
to you... Because I may research that term.
Mr. Price, I will say, as I will point out to all members of council, that we have an approval of the agenda portion of the meeting at the top of every one of our council meetings. Mr. Kraft added this item for discussion under the approval of the agenda, and it was approved by a majority of the council last week. So it was officially put on the agenda at the top of that meeting, so I believe it was legally put on the agenda.
So just to answer my question, I'll move on.
There's a motion on the point of order. There's a motion on the floor. The motion is to approve the minutes.
Mr. Kraft, I believe Mr. Price is trying to get some clarification, and I will allow him to do that. Mr. Price.
Right. And that's the point I'm trying to make. Historically, he interrupts me. He does it repeatedly. He has no respect for my conversation. And he's been allowed to do that for many, 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 many months. He does it all the time.
Mr. Price,
so I need a clarification from the chair. Does he have a different standard than me by the chair? Because you run the meeting.
Mr. Price, I believe I treat all members of council the same. I would like to stick to the discussion of this point. This item was put legally on the agenda at the top of the last council session.
So you won't answer my question.
Mr. Price, I'm glad to talk to you about that in another forum. I don't believe that belongs in this discussion about the approval of the minutes. I would like to wrap up that conversation so we can move on for our residents and the council. Ms. Carr.
Actually, I'd like to address the fact that you said that the agenda was changed and that it was followed the procedure. Mr. Kraft clearly said, and if you would like me to play that, I will, that he was going to put on the agenda a discussion of council rules and procedures. That was not what the discussion was about. It was a mischaracterization, and it goes to the heart of revised Missouri statute 610.020 to reasonably apprise the public of that which will be discussed. This was a mischaracterization at the kindest. So my point of order was, let's be quite honest, there were cameras out here and people were here to hear this. It wasn't just that, it suddenly came as an epiphany from Mr. Kraft's consciousness. This, some people were told, some people knew, and some people were not told. And this council was not told, even when Mr. Kraft asked to put it on the agenda. That is why I am asking that the mayor's ruling, because I believe that the mayor knew ahead of time, the mayor's ruling be put in quotes. And by the way, unless there is a council rule that says that we cannot adjust the minutes except those minutes which pertain to those statements which we make, then I'm going to ask for it, because I have seen plenty of errors in other parts of the minutes and have corrected those. This is contentious. It was contentious 2 weeks ago. It will continue to be contentious.
Mr. Kraft?
I'm going to suggest that we hold the approval of the minutes and move directly to the council comments section so we can fully discuss the issue of the agenda. If I'm going to ask the consent of council to do that now, and we can come back to the minutes.
I'm not sure I get. Are you asking us to move this discussion to the council comments section?
Well, I'm suggesting that we go direct, since that's what everybody's discussing. Why don't we just discuss it now, and then we can come back to the minutes later?
I would like to suggest that I would prefer that we not delay the swearing in of our residents, citizen participation, and the city manager's report until after a long discussion. I think we can have this we don't have a lot of other stuff on the agenda. We can have this discussion at that section of the agenda. Mr. Glickert?
Well, there's a motion that was put on the floor to approve or not approve. So what I would like to suggest is that we postpone the approval of these minutes. I move.
We have a motion to postpone for Mr. Glickert. Do we have a second? Mr. Kraft, did you second? Is there any discussion?
point of clarification. Should it be postponed? Should it be tabled? Should it be postponed indefinitely, Mrs. Pump?
Table, you have to bring it back up at this meeting. If you postpone it, it's brought up at a future meeting.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Mr. Clickard?
There's a lot here. Obviously, some people have done some research. I think it'd be best for all of us to postpone it until the next meeting, so we can all have a chance to fully digest what has been said, what is being said, what is inferred, what is not inferred. So in the interest of our citizens here and in the interest of moving this agenda along. So I move to postpone it until the next City Council meeting, the approval or the not approving of these minutes.
There's been a motion by Mr. Glickert and a second by Mr. Kraft. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. We now move on to the, I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the May 1st City Council special meeting. Is there a motion to approve? Ms. Carr, is there a second? Mr. Sharp, is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. We have Mr. Michael Miller is not able to be nominated to appointment to the Historic Preservation Commission, so Mr. Kraft has pulled that appointment. We now move on to the swearing in. I'm sorry? Mr. Sharp. I'm sorry, Mr. Sharp pulled that appointment. I am sorry about that. We now move to swearing in. Is Mr. Harold Williams in the audience tonight? Mr. Williams, if you could come up to the podium. Mr. Williams will be sworn into the library board.
I, and your name?
I, Harold Williams.
Do solemnly swear that I possess all of the qualifications. Can you repeat that?
I possess all the qualifications.
And I'm not subject to any of the disqualifications.
I'm not subject to any of the disqualifications.
Named in the charter for the office I'm about to assume.
Named in the charter for the office I'm about to assume.
That I will support the Constitution and the laws of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution and the laws of the United States.
And of the state of Missouri.
And of the state of Missouri.
And the charter and ordinances of University City.
And the charter and ordinances.
And that I will faithfully and conscientiously discharge the duties.
And that I will faithfully and conscientiously discharge the duties.
Of the office I'm about to assume.
Of the office I'm about to assume.
With impartiality and justice.
With impartiality and justice.
That's it. Can you come up here?
Thank you very much. Mr. Dennis Finnegan was sworn into the Calip Commission in the City Clerk's Office, and Kathleen Stanley was sworn into the Park Commission in the City Clerk's Office. We now move on to the citizen participation portion of this agenda. I ask everyone to keep in mind there is a limit of 5 minutes. Please turn the mic on when you come to the podium and off when you leave, and please state your full name and address. I will be calling those who have requested to speak on non-agenda items. The first request comes from Eleanor Mullen.
I'm on, aren't I? Good evening, Mayor Welsh and Council members. I'm Eleanor Mullen, President of the Historical Society of University City. Before I start my one-minute printed speech, I would like to announce that at this very minute, we're very proud of a sixth grader at Flynn Park School, Gabe Fleischer, who's across the street in the library with a book signing for a book that he has written on the history of Flynn Park. So I'm dashing back over there as soon as I'm done and hope we have a great crowd, and I hope you all get a chance to look at his book. It looked great at a glance. Thank you. In any event, I'm here to talk about the proposed traffic roundabout. The mission of the Historical Society is to preserve and promote the history of our city, and thus we really vigorously protest anything that destroys the integrity of the Civic Plaza, which has stood for over 100 years. To remove the existing islands and shape and lighting fixtures would demean this historic plaza. It is our understanding that the roundabout was originally to serve as the turnaround point for the trolley. As the current trolley plans to stop in front of the library, logic would dictate that the turnabout is no longer needed. If the contention is that this would improve traffic flow, we would like to see statistics that support this and show how this would vastly reduce whatever serious dangers occur in that area. It seems to us that the real traffic bottlenecks on Del Mar occur between Kingsland and Skinker, not west of City Hall, where this roundabout would be. If the overriding reason to continue with this project is simply to use money that has been made available through a grant, then shame on any people or agencies who are promoting it solely for that reason. The Historical Society simply cannot condone or even understand why anyone would want to destroy the charming look of our Civic Plaza and the history that make University City unique. We urge that the Council not go forward with this project. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Ms. Margaret Johnson.
Good evening. Margaret Johnson, 7509 Gannon Avenue. I would like to speak to the newsletter that Ms. Carr set out, part of which involved the bike walk plan. As you know, I'm co-chair of the bike walk task force. I agree with Ms. Carr completely that the bike walk plan is not dead. It obviously is alive and well and just simply still can going through a lot of hoops that you keep putting in the way of the bike plan being approved. But the point I want to talk about is the fact that Ms. Carr claims that University City already has a bike plan. U City does not have a bike plan. What U City has is a bunch of disconnected bicycle routes and a facility map that shows where those routes are. We rode on our bicycles every bicycle route already in University City, and the ones that made sense, that connected to other bike routes or connected to other ways in the city, we rolled into the bike plan. The ones that did not make sense, that did not connect anywhere and simply didn't go anywhere, we did not put in the current bike plan. So University City has a draft of a very good bike plan, and that's all University City has at this point. We have completely disconnected with no destinations for specifically planned on the bike routes that already come into University City. They tend not to go anywhere, and they don't come from anywhere. The ones that make sense are in the draft of the bike plan. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That is the last request to speak on a non-agenda item. We now move on to the public hearing for the fiscal year 2014 budget. I would now like to open this public hearing at 7:06 p.m. We have one request to speak by Ms. Elsie Glickert.
Thank you. Elsie Glickert, 6712 Etzel. Thank you, Madam Mayor. Ladies and gentlemen, I have my wish list, which I'm having distributed to you, and the first item concerns the River de Pere as it comes through Heman Park. Please dredge the River de Pere in Heman Park as it approaches Vernon Avenue. Silt has built an island in this section of the channel, and it's actually growing vegetation. Now, I realize this is the responsibility of Metropolitan Sewer District. I would suggest the city manager and the mayor, or a second ward council member, would do well to go to the MSD board and request this dredging. That is their responsibility. But if they say no, I request that money be put in this budget Our pool and our recreation center must be protected from flooding. Many years ago, we were able to convince the board by a visit to their meeting to do conservation on 82nd Street. And as a result of a council member and the city manager going to the board, that area was preserved. Under the previous administration, $50,000 of our community development funds went to repaving Wellston's section of Sutter Avenue. And that was with the understanding that Sutter Avenue would become a county urban road because it houses the Police and Fire Academy. There was absolutely no follow-up by the part of the administration, and this should be pursued because we have to, it's our tax dollar that maintains that road with sweeping and snow removal. It should become a county urban road. Number three, please plant trees on Kingsland Avenue and Sutter Avenue. This too was promised, but the planting never was delivered under the Northeast Plan. I would suggest, number four, that additional bulletin boards would serve well at McKnight and Olive, and at Forsyth and Big Bend. These boards do very good in delivering messages to the citizenry. And if my memory serves me correctly, University City still owns the southeast corner of Forsyth and Big Bend, which is adjacent to the Washington U athletic field, unless they've absconded that from us, too. I would respectfully suggest that the alleys north of Olive be swept. The previous administration of the Public Works Department stopped this service, which had been in existence since street sweepers were invented. Alleys are an important part of the cityscape. Previously, number six, previously all city and school district employees were given a, quote, perk, unquote, of one-half price on the pool swim pass. And then when the rec center was built, that one-half price was extended. The previous administrator of the park department did not see the necessity for this, and it was dropped, even though it had been in existence for many years. Please reinstate this benefit to our employees, because it's good to have officials' eyes and ears at these facilities, and it's money in the bank. Number seven, boards and commissions are now meeting at Heman Park Community Center. The public is entitled to a decent public address system, and the current one does not meet that description. It should also meet ADA standards for the hearing impaired. Number eight, police cars deserve the same consideration as an office. Please see that sufficient money is in every budget to replace seats frequently to avoid back problems for our officers. Number nine, Etzel Avenue is the only University City-owned street which goes all the way through to the city of St. Louis. The other streets are county urban roads. Etzel is disintegrating into gravel. Please do not waste our dollars on a mock roundabout in lieu of repairing streets. That proposed roundabout is the joke of the century. Thank you.
Thank you. We have no other request to speak at this public hearing, so I close this public hearing on the fiscal year 2014 budget at 7:12. We have nothing on the consent agenda. We now move to the city manager's report. Mr. Walker.
Madam Mayor and members of council, the first item under the city manager's report is the sidewalk and curb ramp upgrade project. Staff is recommending that the additional $50,876.25 be taken from the $475,000 extra that was budgeted for street and sidewalk repair, and the contract be awarded to Lamke Trenching and Excavating Incorporated.
Is there a motion to approve? Mr. Price moves. Mr. Sharp seconds. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. Mr. Walker.
The second item under the City Manager's Report is the site plan review application for 633 North McKnight Road for an addition to an existing commercial building. It's essentially the conversion from bank to apartment leasing office. Staff is recommending approval with the attached conditions.
Is there a motion to approve? Ms. Carr, is there a second? Mr. Crow, is there any discussion?
Yes.
Mr. Glickert?
One question. I think it's a great project, but I was wondering, why is the ATM machine to stay?
Madam Mayor, I'm going to ask Ms. Rigatti to reply to that, if we have an answer. The bank likely requested it. I think one of the representatives can speak to that.
If you could please identify yourself and give your name and address.
My name is Scott Volding with Volding Architecture, 325 North Kirkwood Road, Suite 330, Kirkwood, Missouri. The reason the ATM is staying at this point is that Commerce Bank, in the process of selling the building, has requested that the ATM remain there. And I believe the new owners want it to remain there to service a lot of their residences in the apartment buildings that they're buying or have bought.
Thank you very much, sir. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. We now move on to council reports and business. You should all have the updated copy of the appointment and reappointment grids. There are no outstanding reappointments. In the appointments, Mr. Crow has an appointment to CALIP Commission and to the Board of Appeals. Ms. Carr has an appointment to the Library Board. I also have an appointment to the Library Board. Members of council did receive... Mr. Crow?
Is this one... The one from Steve to me, we've been floating this one around, haven't we? I mean, at the end of the day, it says it was assigned to me, but not in 2012. It was just reassigned to me just now, correct?
I believe that should read 13. This is one of the commissions we did not appoint
right.
to for about 6 months while we were figuring out. Okay, and then we have no reappointments. Members of council did receive some board and commission minutes in their packet. If you have any questions about anything in there, please talk to Mr. Walker. And we now, does any member of council have any comments about a board or commission to which they liaise? Ms. Carr?
I attended the Traffic Commission last Wednesday evening, and there was kind of an absence of staff there, although Mr. Alpazlin was there, and someone was there to take the minutes. I believe that the Traffic Commission would have benefited by the presentation, a presentation of both the update on the loop and the update on the mock roundabout. And in addition, the police liaison was unable to make it because of an emergency, but I think that we should transmit that information so that the Traffic Commission can conduct their business in a timely manner. I also noticed that the papers, the agenda, and the packet was not available. And also, as Mrs. Glickert noted, it's very difficult to hear from that system and in that room anyway. So I do agree with you, and we'll make every effort to make sure that there's some kind of hearing equipment for you.
Thank you. Any other comments? I will say that I did attend a meeting of the Land Clearance Redevelopment Authority. We listened to a request for a blighting of some properties for Habitat for Humanity. The Board of the Economic Development Sales Tax has met once and will be meeting again to discuss the recommended budget appropriation for those funds. And the Loop Trolley Transportation Development District Board also met. Any other comments? Hearing none, we might now move on to other discussions in business. Ms. Carr and Mr. Price.
This evening, I wanted to bring up the topic of the Missouri Historic Tax Credit. I became familiar with it when I lived in the city some 30 years ago. I have watched over time how many historic buildings have been renovated. I think it's been a real boon to our economy and to redevelopment. And I understand now that the State Senate is considering a cap on the amount of money available. I've included for you some projects that have been done in University City and some projects yet to be done. And we have whole areas, for example, the Parkview Gardens Historic Area, Maryland Terrace Historic District, the Parkview Historic District, University Heights Subdivision Number 1, University Hills, et cetera, et cetera. So there are a lot of buildings that can benefit from this tax credit. When I was contacted, I was asked how we felt about it because apparently our state senator is not in favor of it. And so I wanted to know how we as a council felt about this.
Mr. Crow?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would tend to think that due to the very small amount of time that is left in this legislative session that I think it may be done this week. If council were to say that they would like to preserve the historic tax credits, which have been useful in University City, probably the most, if there was a pretty much unanimous agreement, would be sort of the only way possible would be to instruct the city manager to make some communication with our elected representatives to participate in that conversation. I don't know that, I sure don't speak for everybody on the council, but this may be one of these opportunities where I think truly U City, with the age of our housing and buildings in general, probably has benefited as much as any community in St. Louis County on these tax credits, and it probably would make sense to let our elected representatives know, if we do support them, that we'd like them to remain.
Does any other member of the council want to say anything? Mr. Price, sorry.
Yeah, just... If the city manager could comment on what he views as the benefit of the Missouri historic tax credits.
Madam Mayor, through to Councilmember Price, I believe that Councilmember Crow is correct that the University City, given the age of our housing stock, and that we do benefit from that particular program, and if the council so desires, I can follow up with the elected state representatives and indicate that University City would like to maintain that program at the highest level of funding possible.
Mr. Sharp?
Then I do move that the council then vote to, I move that we ask the city manager to pursue this concept. Joyce, what's about that? We can't. Are you saying we can't do it?
The previous discussion was that things have to be listed on the agenda as what will take place. It was just discussion.
I think many of us have spoken to our state senator. I know I have, and state reps. I would have no problem if there's a consensus of the council to ask Mr. Walker to put in writing his support of this along with ours, that many of, I think, our elected representatives have heard from a number of us. I personally have no problem if there is consensus. Is there consensus on the council to do that?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Walker, thank you very much. Mr. Kraft and Mr. Glickert.
Thank you. The bike walk plan has raised many questions, and there's a staff memo that was distributed by the city manager which addresses many of those questions, and I've asked that full memo be entered into the record. I think it's in everybody's packet, and there's extra copies here. And I would just like, again, to mention some of the main points that are in that memo, since there was a lot of discussion, and I think some information would be helpful to clarify the most important issues. Issue number one was concern from the private subdivisions that potential bike routes were placed on private subdivision streets in the draft plan, and the response was essentially that this is a draft plan and that the city will seek approval from the subdivision before proceeding with any route. If the subdivision does not approve the route or want the route, it will not be implemented through that private subdivision. Two, liability from the bicycle route. The response was that the subdivisions currently assume liability for car, pedestrian, and bicyclists on their private streets and sidewalks, and this would just not change. It would stay the same as it is. Three, paving and maintenance of the bike route. There were concerns about that, and the response was that, again, this is a plan, but an agreement with the private subdivisions would address those issues, and it is anticipated that the private subdivisions would incur no costs. Four, in 2005, City Council approved a resolution that supports building Centennial Greenway through University City. Does gave Great Rivers Greenway had the authority to design and plan the greenway, but only with city approval. Before any building takes place, Great River Greenway agrees to fund all the construction costs, and University City has to agree to fund ongoing maintenance, so that contract has to be approved by council before any of that can happen. At this point, UCity is not obligated to any further building on the greenway. Five, funding. The draft plan does not make any budgetary commitments to fund any proposed projects. Council maintains full budgetary control. Essentially, nothing gets built unless council votes to spend the money. Six, the draft plan notes, it's not part of the plan, but it notes the need for sidewalk and curb repair. This is to meet the American with Disabilities Act requirements, and this will need to be done with or without the bike plan. So as I listened to the speakers, and I subsequently talked to lots of people, the questions about the bike plan, and I went over the six, but they fall into basically two categories. One, you know, do the subdivisions get approval? And two, you know, cost. So to answer those concerns, I'm sure that everyone on council will agree that no bike route will go through a private subdivision without the consent of the subdivision. Just seems obvious. I would also hope we can agree that the plan itself has no cost because it's just a plan. Just like the Greenway project that council unanimously approved, each individual project will require funding approval by the council. Thank you.
Mr. Glickert.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just Mr. Kraft covered a couple of things that I was going to say. Thank you for that. And just to bring up what I think was really important in the memo that Mr. Wilson sent to Mr. Walker in reference to some of these questions, and the questions were answered by staff. And it's number five in this memorandum from Mr. Wilson, and I think it's pretty succinct and covers what a lot of the minutiae that's been going around. And again, the draft plan does not make a budgetary commitment to fund any proposed route, and it doesn't commit the city to construct all or any or the proposed routes. Here's what's important. It's a vision. And if the city decides to proceed with the project, funding would be sought through the typical budgetary processes. Other approvals would also be obtained prior to project implementation from the appropriate agencies, organizations, and here's what we're kind of going around and around on, approval from subdivision trustees and city boards and commissions.
Ms. Carr?
I'm a little bit confused because I believe that Mr. Kraft did vote to send the plan back to the Plan Commission, but be that as it may. Since we did that, I'm not sure why we're going through this. I'm also a little concerned about this vision and concept versus plan. Since I've been on the City Council, I have discovered that in order to sell the vision to us, it's touted as a vision, and this is not just the the bike plan. It's almost anything. You have no obligation. You will be able to check it. Once we vote on it, that's the policy. And then the administration, Mr. Walker and his staff, will carry out that policy as they deem feasible. Yes, we get to vote on the budget. We get to decide what goes into next year's budget. There are thousands of things in that budget. So using the term vision, using the term concept, is almost a sales technique. And so an example, well, I voted to send a letter in support of the concept of the trolley, not realizing that that concept of the trolley included where the trolley would stub. It wasn't until a couple of months later that I realized that that vote for the concept of the trolley actually set in stone where it would stub. So I think that when we talk about vision and when we talk about concept, we have to realize that the vote that we take here sets the policy, and then it is in the court of Mr. Walker and his staff to bring that policy, to manifest that policy.
Any other comments? Mr. Sharp?
Mr. Walker, I'd like to just ask one question. When we talk about the bike trail, what takes precedence, the construction of the trail and whatever their needs happen to be, or if there are some needs as far as streets, curbs and sidewalks are concerned that need to be done, and we have voted to do those, and we've also voted to do the bike trail, what takes precedence, or is that a question that can be answered?
Madam Mayor, through to Council Member Sharp, I think that Council would ultimately have to decide that. One of the, projects that we've worked on in the past that we need to get back to is Council identifying some of the capital project improvements. And you'll recall about a year or so ago, we had a discussion with you and Council Member Price and the Mayor, basically going through a list of priorities. And I think we need to reconstitute a subcommittee of council and staff basically to start taking a look at all of those capital projects to see what can be funded and what can't be funded and what the priority order should be.
Mr. Price?
Yeah, I would agree with the city manager. I'm not against the bike trail or et cetera, but the bottom line becomes what you just said, Mr. Sharp, what is the pecking order? And once we look at a budget now going forward, when that's finalized, if you interject something in there as policy, it automatically affects how you prioritize your spending. So, I hear people say, we need more trees, we need trees, 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 but the city can't keep them cut as fast as we put them up. We need new bike trails, but the streets I live on, they do, and I commend the city staff, but it's the city manager can only carry out what we budget for him and his staff to do. So they can come patch holes, and then a couple of months later, the hole is back there. So if we drive through the city, we have severe structural issues with streets, sidewalks. So I get confused when we interject new, were we not maintaining existing. So everybody may not ride a bike, but right now it's a bunch of folks driving cars. that live in U-City that don't like running over potholes, don't like, you know, their streets deteriorating, don't like trees growing from one side to the other side. So I think we just have to, you know, set priorities, and then where this falls in the pecking order is where it falls. But I don't think it's at the top of the heap today.
Thank you, Mr. Price, Mr. Sharp. We will get together with the city manager again to continue that work. Any other comments? Hearing none, move on to Ms. Carr and Mr. Price.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I have put some papers in front of you. During the last meeting, I asked Mr. Walker, had the grant that produced the draft bicycle and pedestrian master plan been approved by council? And he said he wasn't sure, but he didn't believe so. So I did a little bit of research with Mr. Walker's help. The first set of pages are resolutions that grant the city manager the ability to either go after the grant or to sign the grant. I have a couple in 2010 that this grant was received at the beginning of 2011, was solicited during October of 2010. So I have a couple from 2010. Now, admittedly, the mayor had been elected in July, and so the first one is in May. But also, the mayor served 4 years previously, so I'm assuming she's familiar with the process of getting resolutions for grants. Mr. Walker was a brand new city manager, just a few months here. I am not holding him responsible for this. And again, there are resolutions for all of the municipal park grants. I also have some emails that are in here. It appears that TrailNet and U-City have been working together on projects. This is according to a TrailNet person. When U-City expressed interest in the bike walk plan and we had funding available. Yes, we had been working on a project with TrailNet. We were working on a path through Ruth Park Woods, as you'll remember. And at some point, I can't remember who wrote the letter, but someone wrote the letter telling the Department of Natural Resources that we would not be accepting it because we didn't have $100,000. So, we were working on it, and yes, we sought it. I have another email that says that the city match share was taken from the administration department budget by the former finance director, Janet Watson. And Mr. Wilson said in the same email, I did not locate any records that indicated that the project was sent to the council for review. Not review, a vote. We have to vote somehow, either a resolution, something on the city manager's report, or a consent agenda. I would think it would be more specific than that. Let me also be perfectly clear. The finance director does not cut a check until the city manager instructs her to. And so I find that off-putting onto Ms. Watson not a little disingenuous. And then on the next email, this is actually one sent by Mayor Welsh to Cindy Mentz, who is the Director of Community Services at TrailNet. And she wanted to let, I'm going to quote, I want to let you know that Nancy McCartney is hand-carrying our application for the Bikeable Walkable Community Planning Grant to your Washington office today. Thank you very much. October 29th, 2010. In our charter, it says clearly, I can't work with staff. I can only question them for the purposes of inquiry, and then I must obtain the permission of Mr. Walker. So I'm not quite sure how that was that Nancy was so intimately involved with the mayor, but that's okay. So here, the application, which, according to Mr. Wilson, Nancy McCartney put together, and also four letters of recommendation one of them written by the mayor herself. And what I'm trying to say here is that this grant should have come to this council for approval. I can't see that it would have not been approved. You were just simply bypassed. So we have a grant, and a city manager who signed the grant, and this city paid $12,000. Who authorized that? It certainly was not the city council. So when we talk about you will be given the opportunity to weigh in on this, well, you might now, because there are lots of people watching, and there are people with more experience under their belt and know better than to do this. But again, Mr. Walker was not authorized by this council to sign that contract to obtain the grant. The mayor couldn't authorize that. In fact, I just wonder how many of the council members even knew we had a grant, not until the task force came and made their presentation. Because, you know, I assure you I wasn't exactly following that, but no. So this is more a point of information. I'm very sure this will not happen again, and that all such things that need to come to the council for approval will. But the bike plan that was generated by this grant of $67,000 was not approved by this council. Now, I had somebody say to me, well, it was such a small amount that the city paid $12,000. If you look at one of the resolutions, we approved the signing of a grant for $4,000, $1,000 of which would be our share. So it's not a matter of money. It's a matter of what the charter says are our powers. I'll avoid the word policy. So this is more informational. And you can't, it's water under the bridge. You can't redo it. We're just going to move on and do a better job.
Before we move on, I would like to clarify that we did not approach TrailNet and ask for this grant. TrailNet came to the staff of the City of University City, said they had extra money in their account. They would like to work with University City. It was staff's decision to work with TrailNet on this grant, and staff handled the whole process. Mr. Walker, did you lean up because of some reason?
Mr. Well, if the discussion is over, then I don't need to say anything. But if it isn't, I have some things to say. So.
Okay.
I have a question.
Mr. Crow.
So all the comments that Ms. Carr made, your reply is that this is staff's responsibility? Did I boil that down, that because we didn't ask for the grant, TrailNet came to us, staff did it all, and therefore,
all I am saying is my colleague said that we went to TrailNet asking for the funds. That was not the case. TrailNet came to us and said they'd like to work with University City. Staff agreed to that and handled the whole process. That's all I was saying to clarify. Okay, moving on. Mr. Carr, yeah. And Mrs. Crow. Okay.
Whether TrailNet came to us as you say, or whether, as Ms. Brown says, that we expressed an interest in it is irrelevant in a sense. What is relevant is that the grant should have come to this council for approval to authorize the city manager to sign the contract and to administer the funds of $12,000. It doesn't matter who started the process. I mean, good for us that we got it. That's not the point. The point is that this council was circumvented or bypassed or whatever you want to say. I don't think it will ever happen again.
My point, though, just for the record, it was to clarify a misstatement that had been made earlier. But if we're ready, we can move on to the next item.
There are a couple of things,
Mr. Walker.
Madam Mayor, if I can just clarify for council's information, I guess. And that is, in some cases, the funding authority requires a council resolution when we apply for a grant application, so we bring that to council and request. They're asking something that the elected officials want to basically bless the grant application. In other cases, that's not required. We have many grants applied for by various city departments on a regular basis. And I guess the criteria that we have used and that has been used by previous city managers has been that when a council resolution is required, it comes forward before the grant application is submitted. In other cases, for smaller grants, and particularly if they're within the city manager's spending authority, then we apply for the grant, and if we're successful, that's good, and if we aren't, then that's not so good. But as I said, there are some funding authorities clearly require a council resolution. Others do not.
Thank you, Mr. Walker. Mr. Price?
Yeah, just to the city manager and your spending authority is what?
$25,000.
Right. So any grant over $25,000 would have to have a resolution to it or be brought to the city council.
And any grant that required a city contribution of $25,000 or more, yes, would come to council. And as I indicated, Council Member Price, in some cases, dependent upon the funding authority, no matter what the grant amount is, they require a some action by the elected officials of resolution. And in those cases, we bring them forward. But there are a whole bunch of grants. For example, in the police department, that comes immediately to mind, we apply for grants on a regular basis. They don't come. They don't require a any action on the part of council. Other grant applications that I can think of, in our recycling program, for example, there are several of those grants that we apply for that don't require any council action, and we apply, and in some we're successful, and the others aren't. I guess the point I'm making that when there's a requirement, we clearly bring that to council. If there's a spending authority requirement, then clearly that comes to council. But other than that, as I said, we apply for grants on a regular basis. And one of the things that we've been trying to do is to ensure through the council briefs that we distribute is to let council know when we've been successful in terms of having a grant to proceed with a particular project. So.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Hearing none, Ms. Carr and Mr. Crow.
If that is the case, Mr. Walker, I would hope that this council would be advised that we had received a grant of $67,000 and that we would be matching $12,000. And I, again, you are a new city manager. I'm not holding you responsible. I think that this is something. First of all, $12,000 is perhaps not over your spending authority. At the time, it was a resolution, not an ordinance as it is now. But I still think that this is something that should have come to the council, at least in terms of advice, if not consent, advice.
I think we're ready to move on to the next agenda item, Mr. Crow and Ms. Carr.
This is actually back to what we were talking about before. So I'm going to read the revised Missouri Statute 610.020. All public governmental bodies shall give notice of the time, date, and place of each meeting and its tentative agenda in a manner reasonably calculated to advise the public of the matters to be considered. Reasonably calculated to advise, not to misrepresent. I think that is what happened 2 weeks ago. I think that not the whole council, because I don't think people were listening. I objected three times to the misrepresentation, not to the fact that Mr. Kraft wanted to read a prepared speech that lasted 11 minutes and 22 seconds because I clocked it, or because he wanted to talk about how what I said somehow didn't quite fit with his concept of the charter or policy. That is not the point. The point was that he misrepresented the topic that he was talking about. He said he was going to talk about council rules and procedures, and we wound up talking instead about his views on how I did not represent the charter correctly. I think that I don't trust Mr. Kraft. I'm not sure I even trust the mayor anymore. And I'm hearing some people laugh, but this is not laughable. This is a Missouri statute. If you look at what I gave you at the beginning of the meeting, the council rules, the rule number one says that we're going to follow the Missouri statute. And we did not. We did not. No one here misrepresented it. Clearly, Mr. Kraft did. And the mayor allowed him to go on, even in spite of the fact that I clearly said I was uncomfortable with the misrepresentation. I think it's something that we have to address. I don't know that I can ever, will I ever be open to having Mr. Kraft add something to the agenda again? Probably not.
Mr. Crow.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I do think that what Ms. Carr has said is serious, and I do think it speaks to the credibility of at least a couple of the members of council, because I do think clearly that there was no doubt that this was known ahead of time. You can't put that much preparation in. And even to those folks who normally vote together, at the end of the day, really, at the end of the day, was this that important that you couldn't have given notice to your colleagues? That's the part I'm just not understanding. Why this notice couldn't have been given? There was enough time to do all the research, and then, candidly, Madam Mayor, you had the opportunity to stop this completely. And when folks ask us why we have problems with the vision thing of the bike path, it's because it's the credibility of the implementation of the folks who are sitting up here on this council. We've been down this pathway before. The mayor's response at one point in time was, I don't think the logo has anything to do with this. Well, actually, it does, because we voted for a marketing company, and then we were told later on that we approved a logo because we hired a marketing company. I call that a significant bootstrap. And so we've been bootstrapped a couple of times. We were bootstrapped on the Prop U vote. You'll recall there's a Prop U vote where there was actually an abstention. But then later on, it really wasn't an abstention because it was being a steward of the finances. It was an abstention because the city attorney at that point in time thought it may be a violation. So this rewriting of history that has occurred, so to everyone who can say this is all just politics, at the end of the day, this is about credibility. There was no harm in giving all seven members of council notice about the conversation. No harm. And when notice didn't go out, this should not have been allowed to go on. So when we talk about the idea of how these things should move forward, I will tell you that that is one of the biggest concerns I have, because I've been down this pathway before and been told that my vote that I took meant something much broader than what was on the agenda.
Mr. Kraft?
Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. Sound familiar? It's the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. This discussion tonight is a blatant, bullying attempt to use the Sunshine Law to limit political free speech. Council comments are routinely presented without an agenda. Be that as it may, what I discussed was related and clearly related to the rules of this council. No one has ever suggested that council comments somehow don't meet the Sunshine Law. Quite simply, the Sunshine Law is not designed to limit the speech of individual council members. The Sunshine Law is designed to maximize openness and transparency. The Sunshine Law does not limit the free political speech of any council or any council member. And I would suggest for all the attorneys and pseudo-attorneys sitting around here that any attempt to limit or restrict political speech would be overruled by 200 years of Supreme Court decisions that have made abundantly clear that the First Amendment applies to the states, and the Supreme Court has found that political speech, and this is a form of political speech, receives extra protections. The Sunshine Law does not limit the speech of an individual council member or the council. The Sunshine Law does limit some of the actions or some of the votes that the council can take. The Sunshine Law requires that all items to be voted upon be part of an agenda that is published 24 hours prior to the meeting. The items discussed at the last meeting resulted in no votes and no action by council. This discussion tonight is a blatant, bullying attempt to abuse the Sunshine Law, to limit the speech of an individual council member. The guardian of the Sunshine Law has shown nothing but disdain for the Bill of Rights and has abused the intent and the letter of the Sunshine Law.
Mr. Price?
Wow. Point of clarification to the chair. I think at the previous meeting, I estimated how long he spoke. I was a minute short. So when I get to talk, if he talked 11 and a half, I at least get 11 and a half. So my freedom of speech won't be denied. Is that yes or no for free speech?
The clock's running. Mr. Price, as I said before, you can go ahead and speak if I think it's going too long.
So before Mr. Kraft calls point of order, what she was getting ready to do, as usual, he's so predictable.
Mr. Price, just continue. Please go.
So you said I get 11 minutes now?
I would like you to continue with your talk, whatever you're planning. I don't know if you're planning
11 minutes or not. I'm not doing 11 minutes now. I just need to know, in the future, since he got 11, can I get 11?
Mr. Price, I'll do it all when the time comes. You have had longer than 11 in the past, and as I said last time, I think you'll probably have longer than 11 in the future. But why don't you proceed tonight?
Then a point of clarification from the chair. When Mr. Kraft interrupts me, when I'm making points as it relates to the residents, can you tell him he's out of order because he's prohibiting my right to free speech, political speech?
If I feel he's out of order, or if I feel any member of council's out of order, I will call them out of order. But please continue with your comments for this evening.
I need to be clear that I'm going to get my 11 minutes, and when Mr. Kraft rudely interrupts my free political speech, that the chair will exercise her authority to stop him. Because today, he's a proponent of free speech when it's him, but when it's specific colleagues, he's against their free speech. So, to my colleague, you can't have it both ways. Either you for free speech or you not. But you can't play a game when the shoe is turned and you have your prepared text about free speech, but you're against other folks' right to free speech. So moving forward, you either decide what you want to be, but you can't be both.
Thank you, Mr. Price. Ms. Carr?
I think I'll echo Mr. Price's wow. Another straw man argument. I'm really confused. Council comments, we are certainly free to say anything we want. I think the addition, and we never have to put that on the agenda. I think the addition came to the council reports and business, which we do have to put on the agenda, and we do normally have a second on that. So, Mr. Kraft, in no way would I seek to limit your right to free speech. However, and I would like to play this for you, you misrepresented the topic, and that is a fact.
Now move on to the approval of the agenda. Does any member of council have any changes or additions to the agenda? Mr. Kraft?
I would just like, under the council discussion session, I would just like to add a brief discussion of council rules and procedures. And I will not be asking for a vote.
Thank you. Any other changes or additions to the agenda?
That was a misrepresentation of what was read by Mr. Kraft with the appropriate pauses. Well practiced. Mr. Feely was out there with the camera, and there were others sitting in the audience with their iPads to film this. So there were some people, again, who had notice. As long as they have notice, that's fine. The council didn't have notice. And nor did some other people. That's what I find to be a manner not reasonably calculated to advise the public. Mr. Kraft, I would never seek to limit your free speech. You have called me undemocratic, and I never, never stood up to correct you. You may talk ad infinitum, but you are still charged to follow the council rules and the state statutes. We took an oath that said that we would adhere to the Constitution, to the statutes of the state of Missouri, and to the Charter of University City. You misrepresented what you were going to talk about. It is a very far stretch. I listened for nearly 3 minutes for something about council rules, and nothing came up. Now, I'm just not going to tolerate it. I'm going to bring it up every time it happens, and I'm not going to be limiting your free speech. If you want to make that speech under council comments, or you want to advise the council and the public of what you would like to talk about, be my guest. But you may not misrepresent what you are going to talk about and put that on the agenda in the last minute or any time.
Mr. Crow, and then I would really like to wrap this up because we do have a study session coming. Mr. Crow.
Thank you. I would like to wrap it up, too. It's been since eighth grade that I think anyone accused me of bullying. It's been quite some time. I think that normally means that there's not a lot else of substance in the comments. I would tend to think that we need to go back historically and look at a time when at least several of our colleagues here suggested that we take a civility pledge. And I'm trying to figure out whether actions speak louder than words, because I firmly believe that Mr. Kraft can have his free speech anytime he wants to. But at the end of the day, to everyone who has something on the agenda, who wants to get things moving along, if you don't think actions like this, not only promulgated by my colleague Mr. Kraft, but then allowed by the mayor, if you don't think they impact the credibility in dealing with us on these matters, then you've got to be kidding yourselves. This matter could have been avoided. Simple notice, speaking to what was on the agenda, or the mayor saying this was not appropriate at this time. None of those things occurred. It strikes me as we just swore in someone to a board that said to act with impartiality and justice. And I think the interesting thing to ask my colleagues is at the end of the day when you review your actions, did you act with impartiality and justice to your colleagues on this council?
Any other comments? Hearing none, let's move on. We have no unfinished business for tonight. We have no new business except one new bill, Bill Number 9181. Who would like to introduce? Mr. Sharp. Ms. Pum, could we get the first reading, please?
In ordinance amending various sections of Chapter 10, Vehicles and Traffic, to revise various traffic regulations as provided herein.
Thank you very much. We now move on to citizen participation. We have two more requests to speak. Mr. Jim Carr.
Good evening. I'm Jim Carr, 7901 Gannon. I'd like to make a couple of quick comments, maybe a suggestion on civil meetings, getting along. There were a couple of comments early in the evening. I thought it might be a good time to step up, and then a few more comments made it clear that it was a good evening to step up. In the time that I've paid attention and attended a few meetings, there's been discussion of being civil, getting along. There was the pledge that was just mentioned a moment ago. There was an effort to establish blame at some point along the way. With the mayoral election a couple of years ago had all three council members, I believe, talking about how important it would be to have civil meetings. Citizens have streamed up here for all the meetings I've attended, just about all of them are on a regular basis, asking why council members don't get along. And then, of course, tonight we had a little bit more contentious talk. So in the time I've been observing, there really hasn't been much change. I have a suggestion, a possible suggestion, and the answer could come from a little more parliamentary procedure. An exciting subject. This council does a pretty good job when you have routine matters on the agenda. You move through them, you document them correctly, I think. But when the contentious issue comes up, I think you're still falling apart. I have observed, and comments were made a little while ago, I have observed name-calling, personal attacks, mocking behavior, and other less respectful behavior. So I'd like to look back at Robert's Rules of Order, which you all swore to use, to comply with. That's a part of Rule 5, I believe. Those are your rules. Robert's Rules of Order covers a lot of things, and some of you know some of the basics. There's another part I might like to call your attention to. In there is a section on conduct of meeting, and in that section is a subsection on decorum in meetings. Of course, Robert's Rules of Order is set up to be an efficient way to conduct business, to have a respectful meeting, and then this section on conduct of meetings and decorum includes more specific information on how is it that we keep that respect when we are in disagreement, maybe in strong disagreement. Well, it identifies several things that you're supposed to do. You're supposed to, once again, respect one another. And this is why in the movies and the TV shows you see people talking about the gentleman that they really don't like at all, but they talk about him, I'm not pointing to you, Mr. Sharp, my esteemed colleague from Ward 1, Ward 2, Ward 3, even though he's disagreeing strongly with the man. So the idea, Robert's Rules of Order asks us to look at ideas, not personalities. That section to which I'm referring, I can get the numbers for you if you need them, if you can't find them. It says, we do not talk to or about one another. We talk to the issue. It says you address the chair. Not that we're addressing the mayor, who is the presiding officer, but that you're addressing the chair as a concept so that you're specifically not addressing another person. You don't use names. Now, if you want to go to the extreme, we do not use one another's names. Once in a while, you do need to refer to somebody who's in the middle of a discussion. But by and large, you want to talk to the issue, not use someone's name, not address them, not argue directly with someone in the meeting. And you don't talk about the motives for someone who is having a different, sharing a different view than yours. When you use someone's name in here, folks, council members and Madam Mayor, when you use someone's name in here, when you give a speech using someone's name, or a citizen comes up to use someone's name repeatedly, you're making it very personal. Ask yourself, what happens when someone wants to call you, you know, find some fault in something? There is fault, we need to fix it, or it's Bob's fault. You want to leave the personal names out. Similarly, you want to leave out the personal pronouns, you or he, where you can. Now, I'm kind of talking about the extreme of Robert's Rules of Order, but when you folks get down into the gutter of fighting things out, you might try to do those. You might try to use those steps where you're addressing just the issue. Leave out the name of that person. Let me go back to where I started, folks. This is Robert's Rules of Order, City Council Rules, Rule 5. That's what you agreed to do, essentially sworn to do. Leave out the personal names. Leave out the personal attacks. And you've already demonstrated this evening that you know how to bring up a point of order. That would be a way for you as council members not presiding to bring up the issue. So that's another thing among everything else. Sunshine law, the things you've talked about this evening. But a point of order would be a good way for anyone to bring it up. Final point is you're all responsible. Not just one or two people who might be bickering over some issue, but you're all responsible. So some of you are more vocal sometimes. Some of you are more quiet. There is no one who's exempt from carrying out the rules, the laws that you have sworn to uphold. So it's incumbent upon everyone to ask for a point of order, to ask your colleagues to behave as you agreed to through the respectful conduct of meetings as outlined in Robert's Rules of Order. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greg Pace.
Gregory Pace, 7171 Westmoreland. First item, the $25,000 spending limit. Mr. Walker, I'm a big fan, you know that. But I think you have to separate spending from revenue. That grant is revenue. The spending limit doesn't tell you, doesn't say where that revenue is from. So I have to say that if the total, if the grant is over $25,000, it doesn't matter what our match is. If the total spending is over $25,000, that's what the charter says, because the grant is just another form of revenue. So that's my opinion. Mr. Crow talked about credibility and history. Off the top of my head, I remember when Ms. Carr was first seated that first night, there was a vote taken on turning the lights on. That was not noticed to the public, wasn't on the agenda. That was a very contentious issue, as I recall. And I don't think, I read the paper that day, I don't think there was any golfing emergency that couldn't have waited. In addition, recently, there was a 45-minute discussion about the mayor disclosing a legal document. Again, not noticed. Again, it could have waited to the next meeting to get a pound of flesh or whatever the idea was about that discussion. So, you know, history, credibility, let's think about that. And the last thing I wanted to say was as far as Mr. Price being really interrupted, I've said this before, but a citizen was up here giving a comment recently, and Mr. Price rudely interrupted that citizen. So we have to think about everybody, not just yourself. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. That was the last request to speak. We now move on to council comments. Does any member of council have any comments to make? Mr. Lickert.
Just real quick, one of the citizens talked about the ADA compliance with the community center, which is our new place for boards and commissions. Mr. Walker, I've noticed that the commissions that I've been on use the facility, it seems like the setup, if you will, of the chairs, the tables, it's different at every meeting. So I think if we could bring some continuity to that, it would certainly streamline the boards and the commission's meetings over there. This is where you sign up, like we have here. This is where we'll have our chamber, and this is where the commission members sit. And obviously this is coming about just recently because of the mandate from the federal government dealing with the EOC room. And the EOC room was obviously set up in a way that the meetings were efficient. But if you could do that, some kind of a facilities committee to get that squared away, I think it would help all of us. Thank you.
Ms. Carr?
I'd like to make an announcement on behalf of uCity in Bloom. In partnership with the Pershing School and Lowe's Stores, they've received two grants that will fully fund the new community school vegetable gardens at Pershing Elementary School. There'll be 16 raised beds, two of them accessible to the handicapped. It's very exciting. Again, uCity in Bloom is not only beautifying our community, but helping to educate our children.
Mr. Crow?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would like to join with the Ms. Mullen, who spoke from the Historical Society, and congratulate Gabe Fleischer again, because I hope that you all do get a chance to read the book. It's actually there's now a autographed copy in the library, which he presented to them earlier, and I was fortunate enough to get a copy early on. So for any young man to have taken that level of interest in our city is incredible. And you, of course, can also get his email updates daily if you'd like to get on his Wake Up Politics email. To the city manager, I just have two update questions that I hope that you and or someone from staff can get to me. And that is that, can we get some form of an update on the governmental relations position, the lobbying firm, and I can't remember what we called it, but the firm we were using, I think, in Washington, D.C., about how we were funding it, what our results are sort of as we move through that. And I recognize that may take a little while. And then secondly, I think all of council at some point in time would probably like an update on where we are on the city attorney and how that will move forward. So at some point in time.
Mr. Walker.
With respect to the lobbying firm, I'll provide something in writing to council. As far as the city attorney is concerned, we put out the RFQ, and the deadline for that was last Friday. We have seven submissions that I'm in the process of reviewing. Just in terms of process, we will have a selection committee consisting of myself, the police chief, the building commissioner, and the city clerk. Those are the departments that use the city attorney primarily from an administrative point of view, and ultimately will be coming forward to council asking for a contract approval for one of those seven firms.
Thank you.
Okay, and I would just like to mention a few things. Ask everyone not to forget that the Memorial Day run is coming up on May 27th. You can check out ucitymemorialdayrun.com for details. That supports four uCity nonprofits. There is a free health screening this Saturday at the library, sponsored by Health Education and Protection Services. That starts at 9 a.m. and goes to 10:30. There's a fundraiser for veterans this Wednesday evening at the Market Pub Grill. uCity resident Gloria Nickerson is helping to organize that. There is a reception for the Arts and Letters photo show on Sunday. I believe that is at 2 p.m. at the library. The uCity Symphony Orchestra will also be playing on Sunday at 3 p.m. at All Saints Church. And the Mount Gideon Senior Choir will be singing in a free concert at 3 p.m. also on Sunday. And in just a minute, we will be starting a City Council study session at the back of this chamber to discuss the fiscal year 2014 budget. And with that, I would like to adjourn this meeting at 8:16. Thank you very much for coming.